Welcome to Season 10, Episode 23 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 8th of August, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the community. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello.
And Martin is unfortunately on holiday. What a shame for him. So instead, we have a very special guest with us. It's Dave.
Hello.
Hello, Dave. I should point out, this isn't the Dave. This isn't Davey who we've had on the podcast before. This is Dave.
No, you would have said a different Davey. Podcast. You would have said Davey if it was said Davey. This is Dave.
Didn't want to confuse people.
Yes.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, Mark.
So where might people have heard you before?
Well, they could have heard me a number of places. Predominantly, I have another podcast. Can I say that? I've got another podcast.
Yes, you can.
I have a music podcast over at thebugcast.org, and I've been doing that for, I'm probably going to get hit for saying this, for 4 days longer than the Ubuntu podcast has been going.
Wow.
Brilliant. That's serendipity, isn't it? And how many years have you been doing it? And this is the first time we've asked you to be on this.
Coming up for 9.5 years.
Wow. And we've known each other. So I've known Dave since 1986.
Yes. I've already worked it out. Yeah. So 31 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I won't
gosh.
Tell you what I was doing in 1986.
Were you in the ether somewhere?
Yes,
not
I
being
was yet to be released.
Right.
Still in alpha testing.
So, yeah, me and Dave went to school together, and then I heard of Dave doing the Bugcast, which is Creative Commons music show, and I've listened in a few times. And it's funny, there's parallels in some of the way you do your recording and the way we do our recording and the way you stream your show and the way we used to stream our show. So I think we should probably talk to you in more depth about the Bugcast specifically and how you do all of that stuff in next week's show. How about
yes,
that? If you're still around, of course.
Well, I'm sure I could find some time, yes.
That would be awesome.
Mm. Excellent. Alan, what have you been doing with yourself recently?
I've been adding pixels to my computer.
Gosh, that sounds labor-intensive.
Yes, I had to click on buy it now from Amazon and these two displays arrived in the post, and I've got them positioned above and either side kind of my laptop. The laptop's on the desk, and then above the laptop to my left and to my right are two displays that are on a stand.
Right.
So it's a bit like battle station kind of setup.
I have a similar kind of setup here. So how many pixels have you got now?
They're full HD screens, so they're not high DPI or anything nonsense like that. They're just 1080p. Yes, I wanted it to all just work and not have to faff around with scaling factors and all that kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
And windows change size as you move them from one panel to another, because the laptop itself is 1080p as well. So I thought that would make life easier. So I did that, and I have found myself so much more productive by doing that, because I'm almost never alt-tabbing to Windows anymore, because everything's open, spread all over these three screens. So when someone mentions me on IRC, I see it out the corner of my eye, and I just move the mouse and type a reply and then carry on with what I was doing. So it's I'm finding it like really helpful for my workflow, having more displays. I missed it from when I used to have them, and I didn't have them for a long time.
Cool. Well, I think it's time we got on with the show.
Okay. And now it's time for the news. And first up in the news, the internet exploded with rage when it found out that Red Hat is abandoning ButterFS. Well,
ooh,
it didn't really explode in a range. Well, yes, Butter or B3FS if you're Martin. Hello, Martin. It's still in Spain. So all of those things. There was a little bit of discussion online about how someone looked at the release notes for Red Hat Enterprise Linux 7.4, which is their latest release. And in that, it talks about how they're deprecating the ButterFS file system. Mm-hmm. And there is a little chicken little, the sky's falling, you know, oh dear, poor old ButterFS, you know, someone else has said it's not good enough. And but really, and when you compare that with the status in other places, like ButterFS in SUSE, for example, is like a first-class citizen. It's the default install. If you install OpenSUSE, Leap or Tumbleweed on a machine, you will get ButterFS if you don't coerce it otherwise. Which is interesting that like two very major corporate distros have chosen very different strategies for supportive file
systems. Leap and Tumbleweed the more sort of cutting edge OpenSUSE releases?
Yeah, they are.
As opposed to the enterprise stable. Fez. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But I would expect those kind of technology decisions to feed back into SLES.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe they might change their direction as well. It feels to me like SUSE as a company has skills on board to support ButterFS. Mm. Otherwise, yeah, they wouldn't do this. Like, they wouldn't make that kind of strategic decision for the default file system for all their users. And it's interesting because I have OpenSUSE, Leap and Tumbleweed both in VMs. And, it's worked perfectly fine until I updated it recently and it blew up. And
is that a file system issue?
kind of. I ran out of disk space because all the snapshots that it takes the system state blew up the disk. So I had to go in and manually use the command line like a barbarian and figure out how to delete these snapshots. And I'd never done that before. Right. So it was a bit of a learning exercise. I'm sure someone who's expert in SUSE would probably know this straight away and know the exact commands. But I Googled for a bit and I found some documentation that was on their website. So it's all very well documented.
Okay. So yeah, you also use ButterFS on some storage arrays, don't you? Or have you moved away from that now?
I used to use them on my HP microservers, but I've actually moved away and I use either XFS or ZFS. I'm using ZFS just to test it out, and I use XFS on the other one. But interesting, there is a device in my house that uses ButterFS by default, and that's my Netgear ReadyNAS.
Oh, which, that's interesting.
Yes, I didn't realize this.
I wonder if mine does.
They all do. So it's the default file system, as far as I'm aware. And the only way I found out, like, it hides it all behind a web UI where you just see pictures of disks and pictures of volumes and stuff. But I had to SSH into it recently because I wanted to SCP some files. So I wanted to SSH in to make sure I could SCP files to it. And when I SSH'd in, I typed mount to see where everything, all the disks were mounted, and they were ButterFS. I was like, oh, hello. I wasn't expecting to see you here. It was kind of one of those awkward things, you know, when a friend comes around and you think, oh, God, I wasn't expecting you here. Is this good or bad? But it turns out they bought beer and everything was okay. It was like that kind of friend coming around.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a good thing. So it's not a catastrophe that Red Hat have abandoned ButterFS because it was only a technology preview up till now for RHEL. So it's not the end of the world.
Next up, Marcus Hutchins, the cybersecurity engineer who is credited with stopping the WannaCry cyber attack, which knocked out the National Health Service earlier on this year, has been arrested in the United States, accused of his involvement with Kronos. Which is a piece.
Kronos?
Apparently, it's a piece of malware that was used to steal banking details from the victim's computers. He was arrested by the FBI for that.
This was after he was attempting to fly home after DEF CON, which is a big security conference that happens in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, It was all a bit sort of, a bit unexpected and cloak and dagger at the beginning, because no one knew. They knew he'd been arrested, but then no one knew what had happened to him, and the local authorities didn't know where he was. And then it was revealed that it was the FBI, but then he hadn't had any visitors and it still wasn't clear where he was being held. But then they managed to get some more information out, and he's basically going to appear in court at some point. I think I wasn't clear whether he was on bail or whether he'd just been offered bail, however it works in the US. I'm not an expert on the American courts, unfortunately.
It's strange because there's the the conversation online seems to be somewhat polarized between the how dare they do this to this great man who stopped an epic attack that took out loads of computers in our much loved health service and other organizations around the world, right? It was either that was the opinion, or the opinion was, well, it's not surprising. All those people are like that, and they're probably all like that. You know, they're probably split personality, and on one side they're nice, and on the other side they're, you know, dealing in dodgy stuff with Bitcoin, you know, that kind of thing. It seemed to be you were either one of those two positions online. It was very polarizing.
Yeah. I mean, my initial knee-jerk reaction was, you know, oh, this is the, you know, it's another case of sort of someone's going to be disappeared and you know, we'll never hear from them again. They'll be in some sort of legally dubious detention center. And then it came out that, you know, the actual details of what they were charging him with, and it actually seems like a fairly normal legal process. So hopefully justice will be done, whatever that justice is in this case.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. Although it looks as though the charges for which he's been arrested actually relate to incidents that occurred between 2 and 3 years ago. So it's not like he's, you know, been the saviour of the UK's technology hub and then gone out and done something like this. Yeah, yeah. This is historical charges.
Right. And I think that's the thing that I found frustrating is reading some of the commentary where people were saying, you know, this wonderful thing that he's done, you know, recently should outweigh any of those transgressions he's done in the past. But, you know, you couldn't possibly argue that if you were the person whose bank account had been emptied or whose files had been encrypted or deleted or, you know, whatever. It's somewhat ludicrous to me that people are held up in such high regard that it discounts former crimes that they may have done. Now, obviously, he is innocent until proven guilty, so we don't actually know if he is guilty of these crimes yet, but we'll have to wait and see. And yes, it possibly will take some time for them to form a case against him and for him to actually be either acquitted or sent down. We shall see.
Yeah. And in other cheery technology related news, Google has fired an employee named James Damore, who published on an internal message board a paper called Google's Ideological Echo Chamber, which has since been shared in the media as something of an anti-diversity manifesto. So this sort of, it's an interesting read because it starts off as, you know, a sort of a criticism of Google's approach to diversity, and I'm not sure if anti-diversity manifesto is an entirely fair term, because it's not actually critical of diversity as such. It's critical of Google's sort of approach to it and their sort of political biases. But unfortunately, while there do seem to be some sort of sensible arguments in it, it also detracts into some sort of bizarre generalizations and weasel wording, basically saying that women are less interested in coding than men because of biological differences.
Right.
Yeah, which, let's just say, wasn't taken too kindly.
Right. And I guess it's difficult because companies like Google are always trying to improve their diversity score, shall we say, because, you know, it's perceived as the right thing to do, or it's a good thing to do anyway. And having any kind of negative view that goes against that can be seen as, you know, going against the flow. And okay, he went about this completely the wrong way and massively overboard. But should you fire someone for having penned a memo which criticizes the company you work for? Is that sufficient to fire someone?
I don't think it is. I think that is something that companies in this day and age, and particularly a progressive company like Google, that you'd expect them to welcome and encourage that kind of behavior where people are challenging the way things are done. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think what he said and the way he said it was you know, top class stupidity. However, the freedom of speech and the freedom of expression should allow people to make statements like this without fearing their job in the process.
I'm not sure. I would agree with that for a lot of what he said, but there are some specific things he said in there which I just think, as a company, you can't really, especially a company in Google's position, you can't really defend someone saying that kind of thing.
Right, but sure.
In terms of him saying, you know, this is what, you know, these are Google's positions, and I think it's wrong for Google to, you know, hold these political biases and so on. Yeah, that's fair enough for, and yeah, I don't think someone should be fired for that. But the more general sort of, you know, the more, well, I think what was described by Google's diversity and inclusion head as advanced incorrect assumptions about gender, that side of things is, you know, sort of, it's too far.
Advanced incorrect assumptions about gender. Okay. I like that phrase. That's good. Moving on. The Personal Audio LLC has been demanding patent royalties from podcasters since 2013. And the company was enforcing a patent it had filed in 2009, but never itself used. There's a word for that, isn't there? Well, it turns out the EFF have won a court ruling upholding the invalidation of those bad patents that threatened podcasters. So this is a good thing.
Yes, it means we can continue podcasting without having to pay someone for the privilege, which is nice.
Someone who has a patent on something which really...
Someone who's not a podcasting company.
Right.
Yeah. But yes, it was a patent around something to do with a system for publishing and distributing through media channels, packages of content, something. Yeah, right. Something vaguely nice and worded generic that they'd managed to successfully convince some people to pay up, basically. But yes, the EFF, basically their argument was that this patent should never have been granted, and cited prior art, some of which was from American news networks, where they were basically doing this with their content before. And yeah, basically got it shown that this wasn't a valid patent.
So podcasts have been around for a while. I mean, we are evidence of that, given it's season 9, episode 20. Sorry, season 10, episode 23.
Yes, and there were podcasts that we listened to before we started doing this.
Exactly. Ludicrous. So, good news, everyone. Carry on podcasting.
Yay! No, this was stupid. I mean, if you look at... this has been done before. People have tried this before. I mean, there was a classic case. I can't remember. It must have been a good decade ago when British Telecom tried to claim that they had invented
online shopping, wasn't it?
I think it was hyperlinking.
Oh yes,
it was hyperlinking on the web. You know, that thing that Tim Berners-Lee did. but no, BT tried to claim that they owned it through a patent that they held. It's the same thing. But
the thing is that. The frustrating thing is this patent system is validated by companies which do continue to use patents, like Nokia hold a chunk of patents on GSMs and mobile signaling, and Microsoft hold a bunch of patents on similar things, and they all cross-license from each other, which validates the whole thing, which makes it harder to invalidate dodgy patents like this one, which is frustrating.
Mm.
Let's look forward to some better news another time.
Yes. And here is a roundup of community news and events.
Yeah, first up, a blog post written by me, sorry. Will Cook from the desktop team, he's organised a desktop team sprint. We do these regularly in Canonical, where a bunch of people get together, because as you know, we all work remotely, and sometimes you just need to all get in the same place to get stuff done quickly. And so there's a sprint happening in London for some people on the desktop team on the 24th and 25th of August. And Will has extended an invite to community people who want to come along and help us out in the evening. So we'll be doing, like, you know, paid work stuff during the day, but we'll hang around in the evening on the Thursday from like 4 till 9 or something like that. And people are welcome to join us at the London Canonical office, where you can help us to smash some bugs in the new desktop, which will be Ubuntu GNOME Shell on Ubuntu 17.10.
Cool.
So the thing we're focusing on is fit and finish. So, like, if there's any, like, dodgy pixel borders or the shadows don't line up, or, you know, the theme isn't quite right and buttons don't look correct, you know, it's all those little glitchy, janky inconsistencies that you think, you know, weren't done properly. Given we've got until mid end of October to get this right, we thought now would be a good time to have people fresh sets of eyeballs looking at this stuff. And we'll bring pizza and beer and soft drinks into the office, so people who come along, yes, people who come along, we'll feed you and keep you warm while you're looking at the screen and testing stuff out, and we'll file bugs and track all this stuff, and, you know, when you all go home, we'll start working on fixing those things. So, you know, if people want to come along and fix stuff, that would be great, but you know, we also want people who can identify these kind of problems as well.
Ubuntu member Paul White has written a blog post about the drop in the number of Ubuntu members that have been accepted into the Ubuntu membership. Just looking briefly at this this article, it would appear that in the last, or so far this year, only 5 people have been accepted into Ubuntu membership so far this year.
That's quite low compared to the previous years.
Yeah, a peak of 70 in 2009.
And then it's gone down since then.
So, yeah, it's interesting highlighting this kind of information, because, you know, this is data and we need to use this data to, you know, figure out, is this a bad thing? You know, is it a bad thing that there are fewer Ubuntu members? Yeah, it is, because the Ubuntu members are people who do things like vote in the new community council.
Less people to keep happy then.
Well, yeah, but it also means it's an indicator of fewer people contributing to the project, because people who contribute to the project might apply for membership. I mean, there are some people who contribute to Ubuntu and never even apply. There are people who contributed to Ubuntu, joined Canonical, and do it as their daily job, but they never got around to applying for membership. So there are still people who just don't want to go through this process and don't see the need to do it.
Does this just mean that, you know, everyone who wants to be a member already is?
Right, but that also is a sign that we don't have a pipeline of new people. Right. So, yeah, what we really need is new blood to come along, because you're going to get natural attrition as people move on to other projects, or, you know, they have children, or they change jobs, or their circumstances change, or they just don't want to contribute anymore, or maybe they switch to Mac, who knows. But, you know, there's a dozen reasons. And if you ask all the people who were members, those people who were members in 2009 who are no longer members, if you ask them all, there'll be a different reason for each of them, right? There might be some common reasons, but what is an indicator is that we're not priming the pump for new people to come in and replace them when they drop off. So if someone who was contributing to documentation, for example, and now no longer does, who's going to fill that role of updating the documentation, or who's going to continue doing translations for that country, or who's going to triage bugs in a particular component of the desktop? And so we need to fix that. We need, you know, this is highlighting something that needs fixing in Ubuntu.
So what sort of person should apply to be an Ubuntu member?
So the criteria is significant and sustained contribution to Ubuntu. That's basically it. If you've contributed to Ubuntu, as in, you didn't just come along and fix a bug and then go, okay, I'd like my membership badge now, please. It's a significant and sustained over a period of time. Typically, we say, like, if you've been contributing for 3 months or more consistently, not just like once 3 months ago and then once today, and then say, right, that's 3 months, I'd like my badge now, please. If it's a consistent, sustained contribution, then yeah, sure, you should get your Ubuntu membership. There's not a huge amount of perks to being an Ubuntu member. I mean, you get an @ubuntu.com email address, and you get voting rights in some things. And there's some, you know, recognition of your contribution so far. So some people don't even do it because they don't see the point. There's like no point in doing it, but it's still an indicator when you look at those numbers going down. So yeah, it needs fixing.
Next up, some guy has written another blog post about the Ubuntu Community Hub. Alan, you can probably fill us in on this.
Yeah, that was me again. Sorry. So I posted this on my blog a couple of hours ago as we sit and write this. And
come up with more content for the show furiously.
Yeah. Actually, I wrote the blog post about 2 weeks ago, but I didn't publish it. So this actually follows on quite nicely from the previous post. One of the websites we have is community.ubuntu.com. And if you go there, the goal was that that would be an on-ramp for people who want to contribute. So these are the people who might be members in the future, who might be giving the sustained contribution to Ubuntu and making Ubuntu better and then become members in the future. And community.ubuntu.com was created all with good intentions and lots of excellent people contributed to it, but it's been left to rot and it's kind of stale now. And there's incorrect information, old information, and it's not dynamic enough. So I want to replace it with something more dynamic that people can contribute to more easily.
A wiki?
No. So the proposal I put in there was to use Discourse. Right. So for two reasons. One, because then it's dynamic and anyone can contribute to it, but also to have conversations there about the development processes of Ubuntu, and people can just come along and contribute directly via Discourse because everyone seems to know how to use Discourse. A lot of projects are using Discourse these days. It seems like a good platform to use for collaborating on projects. So that's the goal really, is to get more people collaborating and surface more of the stuff that's going on in Ubuntu. So it's not buried away on IRC channels somewhere or on some dusty old mailing list somewhere, to try and make it easier to access this information and to make the on-ramp easier. So new people who want to start and want to get involved can do so. That's the goal. But it's only a proposal and I only published it 2 hours ago. So we'll see what the reaction is like before we do it.
Right. And we have some events. So First up, it's going to be the last time we mention it. Odd Camp.
Whatever. We're never mentioning Odd Camp ever again.
This particular Odd Camp.
Right.
So this is going to be on the 19th and 20th of August, which is just over a week as you listen to this, if you listen to it on release day. It's in Canterbury in the UK. It's sponsored by Entroware, who have very kindly donated another laptop. I say another laptop. Alan will tell you where the first laptop is in a minute, for the infamous Odd Camp raffle. So if you want another chance to win a laptop, come to Odd Camp and buy raffle tickets. It's also sponsored by Canterbury Christ Church University, who are giving us the venue, the Ubuntu community, and OpenSUSE. And we have just put on the website the schedule, where you can see the times of the scheduled speakers and also some details about the social events. So we're going to be having a gathering on the Friday evening and on the Saturday evening. And you can find out more and get your tickets and book your accommodation at oddcamp.org. And also there's a Telegram channel, which is linked from the website, and you can tweet at Odd Camp and come to Odd Camp.
Yay. Awesome. Sticking with the social gatherings theme, there is a pod crawl happening in Sheffield on the 16th of September in Sheffield, obviously.
What is a pod crawl, Dave?
I'm glad you asked, Alan. Right, a pod crawl is a pub crawl for podcasters, but it's not just for podcasters. It's also for anybody who listens to a podcast or contributes to a podcast, or musicians, or basically anybody can go along. It doesn't matter. There have been pod crawls going on now for, I would say, in excess of 10 years. They're usually in London. This will be the second one in Sheffield. We hosted one, must have been about 5 or 6 years ago now. And in fact, there was one in Glasgow the weekend before last that the wife and I went to. And it's just a social event. It's not really technology related, other than the podcasting thing. But you will find that most people won't be talking shop while we're there. Certainly not as the evening progresses. But there is a link. We have a Facebook event. If you want to come along to that, please do go along and express your interest to coming along. And you can get to that by going to thebugcast.org/podcrawl.
Awesome. We'll put the link in the show notes. So, yeah, that's a bit far for me to go, I think. Maybe not. We'll see. But it's up in Sheffield. Good to see something happening up there in that there north.
Yes.
Also, we wanted to remind you that we are giving away that other Entraware Apollo that Mark mentioned. So you may remember in episode 22, if you don't remember, go back and listen to episode 22, where I reviewed an Entraware Apollo laptop. And the very kind people at Entraware allowed us to give it away. So it's currently sat tucked away in its box behind me, and it's waiting for someone to win it. And the way you can win it is you enter the contest, which we detailed in episode 22. The contest is open till the 3rd of September, so you've got plenty of time to get your entries in. We've already had a bunch of entries so far, and it's good to see them coming in.
Yeah, we've had like a real mix of things as well. We've had some software, some music, some writing. So yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things you'll notice. If you look at the rules, the rules are listed in the show notes for episode 22, but also listen to it because we give all the details in there. We want you to be creative and come up with something. And we've given you lots of options. So it's not limited to programmers or artists or musicians. Basically, anyone can enter with a modicum of skill. And we'll decide which is the best entry and announce
that. You can enter if you don't have a modicum of skill, you just might not win.
There is that as well. Well, yes, true. And we'll announce the winner in our 300th episode, I believe, which is the first episode after the 3rd of September. So we'll review them and it'll be based on our judgment. And submissions that include Ubuntu Mate will not get additional points.
If you're in the US, you can give us a hand by leaving us a rating on Google Play Podcasts to tell others what you think of the Ubuntu podcast.
That's all for episode 23. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing music podcasting.
Yay!
And we'll bring you some command line love.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dave. Are you going to be back next week?
Yeah, I think I can make it. I've checked my diary. I should be free. Yeah.
Cool. Super. Lovely to see you. And yes, I look forward to talking to you about your podcasting activities next week.
Definitely looking forward to it.
See you. Bye.
Bye.